the Truly Amazing Women Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. In each episode of the show, we shine a spotlight on the women who are making strides and changing lives. Hi, this is Hope Gibbs, founder of the Incandescent Radio Network. You are listening to the Truly Amazing Women Show. We are here today with Clea Newman in Westport, Connecticut. She is the Senior Director of External Affairs with the Serious Fun Children's Network. Founded by her dad, actor Paul Newman, this organization is a growing global community of independently managed and financed camps and partnership programs, which have come together with a common purpose, to serve children with serious illness around the world, free of charge. Welcome to the show, Clea.
Thank you. Hope, I'm so glad to be here.
Well, let's start off by introducing our listeners to Serious Fun. This program has 30 initiatives worldwide, including 14 full member camps, 13 global partnership programs, and 3 new camps in development. The network serves more than 440,000 children and families in 50 countries since its inception in 1988. So you joined Serious Fun in January 2013 and work as part of the advancement team to raise money to support the camps and programs. You're also a spokesperson for the organization, helping to elevate awareness of the brand and advance the legacy of your dad, Paul Newman. So tell us about the organization.
Well, Serious Fun is kind of initially Serious Fun was a brainstorm of my father's, that he really felt that the camps would be stronger as a family working together than separate. So basically we brought together this global network of camps, and it's turned into this extraordinary, you know, like you said, 30 programs and camps all over the world, serving 58,000 children and their families every year. If you've never been, it is probably the most spectacular experience you can have for yourself, but for the children, it's life-changing.
So tell us about it. Illustrate it for us. Take us through when you first drive up. What is it like?
Well, what's extraordinary about each camp is that each camp takes on the culture of where they are. So, you know, the camp in Hungary looks different than the camp in Connecticut, and the camp in Connecticut looks different than the one in California, and the one in California looks different than the one in Israel. But what's the same about all of them is that when you drive in, you lose this, it's hard to explain, you lose that kind of feeling of difference. It becomes this like wholesome community where there's just love and passion and nurturing. Everybody feels, everybody just feels that they're one with the experience. Does that make sense?
Sure.
And it's really, I mean, it makes me feel weepy when I think about it. Every time that I go to camp, I just feel like I'm part of something bigger, mm-hmm. Something significantly better than me. And I feel like when the kids get there, I think they feel the same. But what's even more extraordinary is that everybody that they touch feels that way as well. And for every child that walks through the door, not only is it free of charge for them, because we all feel very, we feel privileged to have them be there, but B, their families are struggling with all types of issues because of their child's illness, so we never feel that any family should pay for a child being there. But when they arrive, everything falls away. The stigma of the illness, the focus on their illness falls away, and they're allowed to be just a child and have peers that understand what they're going through. And I think that when you're looking on as a volunteer or as a doctor, you actually view illness differently after experiencing that, which is an extraordinary thing.
Talk a little bit about that. What do you think the transformation is?
For the children?
Yeah.
I said before, it's truly life-changing for them, because it allows them to re-nurture themselves almost through the programming. It gives them the energy to keep fighting, you know. It gives them the support that they need from their peers, from volunteers, from people who keep in contact with them, with the nurses and the volunteers and the doctors. It gives them a kind of a global community that understands what they're going through. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we've all been kids and teenagers, and boy, being different is hard.
Yeah.
And when you gain a community that'll gives you that strength, it's a beautiful thing.
And so talk about, because you've worked with kids who are autistic in a previous job. Tell us, what was it that inspired you from your dad and your mom to want to give back in this way?
You know, I was very lucky. From a very early age, my parents instilled in us an understanding that when you come from privilege, which we were incredibly lucky to have two very loving parents who were very, very successful at what they did and gave us all the opportunities in the world, that really, no matter what your job was, no matter what your career was, your life's work should be in giving back to people that were less fortunate, or animals that were less fortunate, or the environment, or whatever, you know, whatever was your passion. And it really stuck, and it stuck for all of us. All of my siblings feel the same way. And I think that luckily, because it was such a life's work, like life's passion for my family, that even friends and friends of friends, you know, it kind of had a way of growing and expanding, which was pretty amazing. And I think that my parents, you know, they put their money where their mouth was. They didn't just throw money at things. They gave their time, their energy, and that was a great lesson for us. I mean, I think that all of my siblings feel the same way, that, you know, just that you don't just, you know, send a check, although that's a great thing, mm-hmm. But that truly getting engaged in something is, you know, really, it makes you feel like a whole person.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. So before we started, you were telling us a little bit about the salad dressing and how that inspired this entrepreneurial give back from your dad. Can you tell those stories to our listeners?
Well, initially, my father was always a little bit of a prankster, but not a little bit. He actually was known for being kind of a crazy prankster, and some of his pranks got a little crazy. But he used to, for Christmas, he was actually a great cook, and he used to make salad dressing. It was kind of one of his things, that it was one of the gifts that he used to give his very close friends. And he would search, you know, while he was traveling, making films and things like that, he would find antique bottles, and then he would make the salad dressing and put them in these antique bottles. And you know, he'd give them to him Christmas or during the holidays, and, you know, come middle of January, all of his friends were knocking on the door saying, can we have more salad dressing? And, you know, Dad was like, geez, this is really becoming kind of time-consuming. Mm-hmm. You'd make these huge vats of salad dressing. So we had a friend who had this, Stuart Leonard, had these huge supermarkets. They were kind of one of a kind at the time. And Stu said, you know, Paul, you should really think about selling this salad dressing. And Dad said, well, I would never do that and profit from that. And Stu said, well, I think it would be really fun for you. And Dad said, well, I just would never do something like that. And he said, well, I think you should put your face on the label, because he kept pressing it. And Dad said, well, you know, the only way that I would do that is if I gave all the profits to charity. And Stu said, well, I don't think there's any company like that. And Dad said, well, I'm going to figure it out. And so I think he was the first person that ever created a completely for-profit company that gave all of its profits to charity. And, of course, the IRS had no idea what to do with it, because I don't think, you know, it's always probably going to be an issue, because nobody believes that anybody could be that good, mm-hmm. you know. And he was that good.
Wow, that's amazing. And then this, how did this come about, the camp programs, this hole-in-the-wall camps?
Well, it started, well, you mean the idea of it or the first camp?
Both.
Okay. The idea of it, my father always felt that he was very lucky in life. And a lot of people say, and he's been quoted in saying that, you know, that it was luck that made him want to move forward on this, on starting a camp. But I don't question that, but I do remember that there was another piece of the puzzle. We had a very close friend of the family's who got sick, and we actually spent a fair amount of time in the hospital. And in those days, there weren't separate pediatric wings. I mean, there were in very large hospitals, but in smaller hospitals, not so much. And so my family spent a lot of time in and out of the hospital visiting him. And, you know, my father did as well. And he saw, you know, all these children who were so sick, spending so much time and missing out on all of the things that his children were getting to experience. And I think the combination between feeling truly lucky in life and experiencing these, you know, kids really have struggling to even connect with people besides, you know, doctors and adults and, you know, with needles and treatment. And, you know, they were missing out on everything that I as a child was getting to do, one of them being go to camp. But, you know, things as basic as having friends who were my own age, and you know, these kids miss out on going to school, and I think that really spearheaded him for creating a place where kids could just be kids and really rejuvenate themselves.
And he would go and participate, but incognito, I understand.
Well, funnily enough, most kids didn't really. By the time he created the camp, I mean, he certainly was a huge star, but I think most of the kids, younger kids that were at camp, really knew him more for, you know, the Newman's Own products, or, you know, when he did Cars, the movie, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. Like, they didn't really understand who he was. So although he kind of went incognito, I don't think he really thought of it that way. I mean, he spent a lot of time in camp, and for him, it was truly like a haven for him, because like the kids, you know, people treated him differently as well. And so for him going to camp, I mean, he certainly wasn't gaining the same experience as the kids were, but you know, he could go to camp and just be himself, and he was kind of like a big kid. So for him, he could go and fish with the kids and, you know, sit in the mess hall and eat and, you know, have food fights and, you know, do whatever he wanted to do. You know, we used to have these crazy performances, performing nights, and, you know, Dad would dress up and, you know, and he just enjoyed himself. And I think, you know, it was really reciprocal with the kids. He really had a good time with it.
So talk a little bit more about your career. You got into working with kids who were struggling. Tell us a little bit about what inspired you to do that and what your career path was and how you landed here finally in January 2013.
Well, let's see. Initially, I wanted to be a doctor, but I'm terrified of needles, so that didn't work. And then I wanted to be a lawyer. And then I was going to go work in Wall Street because for some strange reason I had a weird math science gene, which nobody could understand in my family. But while I was in transition from one thing to another, my dad actually asked me to come and help out at Newman's Own. And, you know, I'm not sure if he did it on purpose or not, if he saw something in me that was, you know, what I didn't see, but... I got bitten by the bug almost, you know, immediately. I spent a little over a year helping research and understanding some of the organizations that, you know, they would send proposals for Newman's Own and to get funding. And I just was so blown away by the amazing things that people are doing all over the world and the way that they're giving back. And it, you know, the combination between how I grew up and really envisioning the things that people were doing, that, you know, one person can really make a difference, and 10 people can even make more difference. And it just really opened my eyes at a pivotal time in my life, and I just, you know, grabbed onto that. It really made a difference for me. And then I got to work for our first camp when it first opened, Hole in the Wall Gang Camp, and being with the kids and learning how to fundraise and really sell the message, and experience everything that camp had to offer. It was pretty hard not to get inspired. Then I kind of went off and did my own thing because I'm a horseback rider, and worked for Pegasus Therapeutic Riding for them for over 10 years. And that's how I got interested in autism, because initially our program was focused on children with mainly physical issues. But slowly but surely, we were riding more and more children on the spectrum. And I befriended a lot of families and kids that were on the spectrum, and when the opportunity came for Giant Steps, I was truly inspired by those kids and families. So I kind of moved around to different things. But when I, when my father got sick, he really wanted me to help continue his legacy and be involved in it in a more significant way. So I was put on the board of Serious Fun, and I was also on the board of Hole in the Wall, and I was on the board of Newman's Own. And after he passed, I just found that I was spending so much time participating in his legacy, because it's truly what I wanted to do. And I gave up my job at Giant Steps, even though it was very difficult for me to do, and focused full time on this. And it's great. I mean, I love coming to work every day.
That's great. So you guys have some really fun fundraisers. By the time the magazine comes out, the April 2nd one will have passed, but you have some celebrities coming. How do you, you must be friends of the family or other opportunities to hook celebs in. How have you gotten, what was the feedback been from other celebrities, and how do you reach out to them? And
well, I think, you know, artists are people too, you know, and I think that, you know, people who perform for us are inspired by the message and the programs that we do. Mm-hmm. They are certainly inspired by my father and my mother, and they love working with the kids. They love performing with the kids. You know, we make it fun. We don't make it icky, a lot of artists get asked to do things that are not all that inspiring, and we try to make it inspiring and allow them to be with the kids and be with the families and hear the stories. And I think that they get bitten by the same bug that everybody else does.
Yeah, the love bug.
The love bug, exactly. I like that.
It's all, well, you know, I've been a big camper myself, and the power of camp is just profound. And we were talking before we got started with some of your, you know, everyone here, everyone loves camp. You get to be the other version of yourself where you're not all buttoned down.
Oh, when I used to bring donors to Hole in the Wall years ago, CEOs of major corporations and stuff, I would actually ask them to bring shorts, mm-hmm. and sneakers, because I wanted them to blend in. And initially they would say, oh, well, I can't, you know, I've my suit, and I've got a, and I'd say, no, you, I promise you, you'll have fun with this. And I'd pick them up in Westport, and I'd drive them all the way up to Ashford. And by the time we got out of the car, they were kind of prepared. And, you know, within an hour or two, they were, you know, playing softball and, you know, getting all involved. And by the time I got them back in the car to drive home, you know, they were ripping out their own personal checkbook.
Just that's wonderful.
Well, it's the power of camp. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard to not be inspired by the kids, yeah. and really reflect on the struggles that they go through, and really wanting to provide them a special place where they can be themselves and be with their friends and have understanding and support and love, you know, and not feel different.
Yeah, it's amazing, right? What you're doing. So what are your goals for the future?
Well, I think that my goals are the same as every staff member and every volunteer and every doctor and nurse, is to provide these programs for every child that wants them all over the world. And it's mind-blowing to see how it has expanded already. And I think that every day my father is looking down and feeling good about it. I think that the passion that people show for this, for our programs, is equally as inspiring. And I think that the kids would be really happy to have the ability to go to camp. And I you know, if you want to get involved. If you want to support us financially, we can always use the help. You know, it takes $70 million a year to provide all of these programs all over the world. And, you know, get out there, volunteer, learn about us. It'll make you feel good. And to be honest, it's really the right thing to do.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it's quite the legacy, the art and power of giving back.
Right?
Yeah.
I agree.
It begets itself. It comes back and goes forward and all that good stuff.
I agree with you.
So what didn't we say that you would like to share with our listeners?
I think that everyone has careers and everyone has their own focus and their own plan, but getting involved with one's life work, whatever that may be, I'd be lying if I didn't want to sell you on Serious Fun and our programs all over the world, and we certainly need support, but to be honest, find your passion and get involved, because long term it feeds you, it feeds your soul. And every time I'm having a bad day, if I get in the car and I go to camp and I hang out with the kids, you know, that can hold me for, you know, a whole month.
Wow, that's great. Well,
it's worth it.
Yeah, that's here's it's to worth lots it. Of people getting involved. So we are here today with Clay and Newman at Serious Fun in Westport, Connecticut. Be sure to check out their website, SeriousFunNetwork.org, and come to their April 2nd event if you listen to this early enough, and definitely participate as you can. So thank you for your time, Clay.
Thank you. I so appreciate it.
It's our pleasure. You are listening to the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. We look forward to talking to you soon. That's it for today's episode of the Truly Amazing Women Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. If you're a truly amazing woman or know someone who is, don't hesitate to contact us. Simply log on to www.trulyamazingwomen.com and fill out the proposal form. We've profiled more than 250 women on the site who fit the bill of being truly amazing, and we look forward to honoring more. Who will be our next truly amazing woman? Tune in next week for a new episode on www.incandescentradio.com. Here's to your incredible, indelible success.